This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of the Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show. This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Austin down the middle, he goes to win the game! To win the game!
From the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Vladdy rocks the ball. It is gone again! Back-to-back blast in the first.
Earlier on the show, NFL Network analyst Daniel Jeremiah. Oregon head coach Dan Lanning. Coming up, actor Gabriel Luna. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Whether you're listening to us on ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance or you're watching us on the Disney Plus or the ESPN app, 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Thursday Night Football tonight to kick off Week 9. Week 9 is going too fast. Final
always does
game of October in the National Football League season is tonight, Ravens and Dolphins. I already said I think the Ravens are going to win. As a matter of fact, I think the Ravens are going to go on a run. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. If you missed the first 2 hours, I'll give you the couple of headlines, if you will, from our guests. Daniel Jeremiah says, at this point, he has no earthly idea who's going to be the first overall pick in next year's draft and thinks that this year's quarterback class that everybody thought was going to be good is they're still waiting for the good. They're still waiting for this class to show itself to somebody that might need a quarterback in the top five picks of next year's draft. And then Dan Lanning came on and said, for sure, he's not leaving Oregon. So, by the way, Matt Rhule has been extended through to 2032. And, you know, it's kind of by Nebraska. So he's out of the Penn State mix. And I just got to tell you something. You know, since Brian Kelly's firing at LSU, I'm still waiting for one person, former player, current player, coach on his staff, anybody, to raise their hand and cape for Brian Kelly. As a matter of fact, the stories that you hear about Brian Kelly have been universally beyond negative. It's just, is there anybody in Brian Kelly's circle that would raise their hand and say, he's a good coach, he's a good dude, he did this for me, he did that for me? Nobody. The latest one, Andrew Whitworth. Did you see this one?
No.
Yeah. Witt on his pod.
Well, LSU legend.
Yeah. Witt mentioned on his pod with Ryan Fitzpatrick that I don't know Brian Kelly at all, but what I do know is I reached out multiple times to say I'd love to help you and gotten lots of that's great, I'll keep that in mind type stuff. I haven't heard a single story, Whitworth says. Here you go. I've only heard stories to the other side of it. You've even seen some current players who just played for him coming out and saying it was one of the worst experiences they've ever had as a human being and the leader he was.
Holy. That's not good.
I mean, is there anybody out there? Bueller? Is a guy named Bueller who played for Brian Kelly? He's getting sick. Hammered right now. Hammered.
Yeah, there's nobody crying any tears for Brian Kelly.
Wow.
I don't, as a Notre Dame fan.
Yeah.
So that's what's up. And
that's what's up.
So LSU shouldn't be knocking on the door of Dan Lanning or anybody else. He's not going anywhere. Why would he leave Oregon if he loves it up there in his family? He said, because we were going back and forth in the conversation, if you are just joining us, I referred to his kids, you know, at one point meaning his own children, and then referred to his players as kids. And at one point he goes, which kids are you referring to, mine or my players?
Right.
And then at one point then he responds to about these jobs being open, or all of a sudden, you know, you're one, as James Franklin learned, 3-game losing streak away from like, hey, great job. We're getting Tyler Warren and Abdul Carter and taking the team to the college football playoff semifinals and all that stuff. 3-game losing streak. See ya, James, you're out. We'll buy you out for a gajillion dollars. Lanning said at one point, he tells his own kids, he tells my kids, you know, as long as dad's winning, we're at Oregon. And if not, Not at Oregon. So that's what we've done over the first 2 hours of the program. Just had a nice chat with Gabriel Luna, who's coming out here shortly in support of Devil in Disguise, John Wayne Gacy, available now for streaming on Peacock. It's a limited 8-episode series. You're about to get some reinforcements in here, TJ.
I need it.
Because he's from Austin, Texas, and he's a fan of the Dallas Cowboys.
Hey, now.
I have to ask him the question.
Get your damn act together.
We will drag him down to our level about would you take a dear friend as a plus one if they are actively rooting against the team that you have the tickets to go see. But this is about a Dallas Cowboys team that's just at 1 minute they're up, and then the next minute they're down. That's what we call a 500 team. They're 3-4-1, which is a half game under 500. Boy, those pesky ties. Make sure that these fans who thought there'd be no math on the test, there's always math. And he had an interesting way of saying that he doesn't want to hear it, that the offense is so damn good and the defense is not supporting it. It's a team effort, don't you know?
Well, I mean,
it's a team effort. That's one way to put it. Here's another way to put it.
None of us have done good enough. You know, I mean, coaches, players, head coach, none of us have done good enough. That's real. I mean, our scorecard is what it is, you know, and that's not just, you know, defensively, that's offensively. You know, we're a football team that's 3-4-1. You can take the stats on offense and as far as I'm concerned, I mean, is what it is. We want to win, you know, and people talk about, hey, MVP and this and that. Dak Prescott doesn't want to win MVP. You know, he wants to win a Super Bowl, and that's what we want to win. And we're not there yet. We've not played that consistently well enough to certainly be in that discussion, but it doesn't mean the journey stops. It certainly doesn't stop. It just, you get more focused, you get more intentional, and we got to do it together.
In case you're wondering what we bleeped out, he told you to place the offensive stats in a certain orifice where the sun doesn't shine. Or not, well, place that up where the sun doesn't shine. Was that the old George Carlin bit about the words you can't say on television?
Yes, that was definitely. And
there's a certain body part that you can mention.
Yeah.
Cam Ward mentioned it to describe the way the Titans were playing recently.
Right.
But once you use a directional.
Yep.
Steve Sable relation to that say, body part.
Yeah.
Right.
Steve Sable used to put it perfectly. You can use it certain ways.
Right.
But you can't use it certain ways.
Right. He's usually a better wordsmith than that, but I think
he understands that. Way better than me, Rich.
Well, I mean, he's the once upon a time. He's the one who came up with that the autumn wind was his pirate.
Yes.
At any rate, the Dallas Cowboys have an Arizona Cardinals Monday night visit to finish up this weekend's action before a bye, and then a Monday night visit to Vegas, while Philadelphia is on a bye this week before returning against Green Bay. And Detroit at Green Bay for the Philadelphia Eagles and Detroit. So that's the next 3 weeks before they see each other in week number 12. Dallas must win their Monday nighters around their bye. And then sit back and watch the Packers and Lions do their thing against the Philadelphia Eagles. That's simple. It is that simple because Dallas tied their game against Green Bay and they both have yet to play Detroit. That's it. And that's the way that the Dallas Cowboys can go into that contest in week 12, 5-4-1, and have the Eagles being 6-4, and off you go. And they still have a shot at the division. Because I'll tell you what, man, I know it's a higher register Thursday, so I'll say this in a higher register form before we get to the actual segment. I don't know if the Commanders are going to come back from this year. And this is Jaden Daniels is hurt. The second time this year, he's missed a game, and then you're wondering, is he going to come back? And then he's saying, you know, I wanted to play, medical staff, this. I got to listen to these guys. I got long-term this, long-term that. Terry McLaurin's holding out. Then he gets hurt. Then he comes back. Then he scores a touchdown, comes out. Terry McLaurin, and again, I have him in not just one but two fantasy leagues, so I'm clearly invested in his
well-being.
Right. As well as, you know, what he's doing. Both times, Marcus Mariota is starting. The Washington Commanders are taking on the Vegas Raiders. And here goes McLaurin into the end zone. He's tackled at the half-yard line. I thought it was a touchdown. It wasn't. Poof. on that play that he almost scored, it's a quad injury. And suddenly he's standing on the sideline, yada, yada, yada. He's back a month later. And then he has two incredible catches, one for a touchdown, one on a sideline.
Yeah, the toe tap was insane.
And then the knee getting down before the rest of his body gets down. Yeah. That was an incredible catch. Holds on to the ball. Next thing I know, he's out with a quad.
Yep.
Two incredible plays he makes, and the quad doesn't survive the ground each time. The ball does. He's out again. Defensively, they can't stop anybody. Running, they can't consistently do anything. They haven't done anything consistently. Stay healthy. Stop. You. Mm-hmm. Or run it against you. Sometimes they can. Sometimes they can't. They got the Seattle Seahawks this week. On Sunday night, Seattle's coming off of a bye, and they are the kings of coming east and beating you in your building. So I'm concerned about them. The Giants, I think, are out of the mix now because they can't keep anybody healthy there that can help Jackson Dart, whether it's Malik Nabers or Cam Scatitibo.
Yeah, remember, though, Tyrone Tracy balled out last year.
He
came out of nowhere.
Yeah, he did.
I got a feeling, man. I really wanted to pick him up. I couldn't get him. I had a feeling Tyrone Tracy's going to show improvement.
That's not winning the division.
No. But
no,
still
but
have some hope.
But they could play spoiler this year.
Well, I mean, the Giants.
They have a hard schedule. They're playing a lot of good teams, so they could really, you know, kind of throw a wrench into things.
Actually, take a look at who they have left. They've got San Francisco this week. Just to, again, forget about where or who. San Francisco, Chicago, Green Bay, Detroit, New England, Washington, Minnesota, Vegas, and Dallas. The only one that's currently, you know, so far away that you're not thinking they've got a shot to do very much this year is Vegas in Week 17. Otherwise, the Giants are front and center playing a crucial role.
Yeah.
Interesting. 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on the program. Who's hanging on for a bit here? Let's go to Dan in Orange County, California, right down the road here. What's up, Dan?
Hi, Rich. Great job with Coach Landing. That was a fun interview. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. That was very Rome. That was a very Rome call right there. Was it epic, Dan? Dan, was it epic? Was the chat epic?
Phenomenal. I wasn't going to go that far.
Was it phenomenal? Right. Oh, see, I can take it. I can take it. Good interview, Rich. Epic? Phenomenal? No, not so much.
But good.
I'm fine with it.
Solid interview.
It was solid, right, Dan? It was solid.
Stop it.
I was calling to say that all of sports media and everything that you've made your career on is based on friends rooting for different teams.
Yes.
So I hope to change your mind on that one. Friends rooting for different teams and going to a game is the heart of sports passion. So I
really the heart of sports passion is I don't want to hear it. I'm so locked in and I'm so fervently needing this victory. I don't need you sitting there next to me actively rooting against it. I just don't need it.
Yeah, maybe so, maybe not. I happen to be an LSU graduate, and you mentioned Brian Kelly. You're not going to hear anybody running to his defense. I don't know that anybody really knows exactly what happened down there, but I think over time you're going to get some reporting, and none of it's going to be positive. Mm-hmm. We don't know what happened, but it didn't look like he knew what was going on.
Okay, so Dan, let's just meld these two topics together, and then I'll send you on your way in Orange County. You're an LSU you're an LSU fan, right? Correct.
Yes.
Okay. Let's just say you get two tickets to the SEC championship game, and your best friend roots for Alabama. You're bringing that friend? Yes?
Yes, because that's the entire fun of sports. That's why you're famous, is because fans root for different – friends root for different teams.
Okay. Dan in Orange County, I'm beginning to think we're less than a human being, Christopher.
I'm okay with that.
Okay. It's a Thursday. This is our favorite segment. We love to do. Is this our favorite segment, or did I just go higher register?
We like the voice.
It's more than a solid segment. I don't know where this is born out. I think it was born out of
how it got born. I said something to you, and then you were like, "You know what you just did, right? You went higher register," and we were like, "You were like." That should be a segment. You literally
talked about it on the air. I forget what you said, but I pointed out that I noticed, and I'm talking with friends, regardless of which team they root for,
we root for
that if you go higher register, It's you not really truly believing what you're saying.
And you concocted it just
sitting
right
there. And
then
we talked about it at length, and off the air, I said, you know what? That should be a segment.
Yeah.
And then we asked...
Well, Frank was doing the Schefter voice the one day.
Right.
About like sources and all that stuff.
So did we take that straight from an interview?
No, I think we took that from an interview.
Okay.
Where he was doing Schefter.
Regardless, it's one of our fun segments to do where we take a take that we kind of believe about the upcoming week of football and go higher registered to believe it. Hit it.
There's a chance.
The Rich Eisen shows.
That there could be.
Higher register. Take of the week.
I think also my favorite part is the running man shrugging.
The shrug emoji.
He's just kind of like,
there's a chance.
You don't know, there's a chance.
He looks like the old N1 guy.
Right.
All right, Chris, what's your higher register take of the week?
Okay, this team is kind of balling, but they're still under 500, so they're not getting a lot of pub. C.J. Stroud has taken a lot of grief last year, this year. He was really excellent against San Francisco last week.
True.
And if they can beat the Broncos on Sunday, the Texans are still in the mix to win the South.
Mm.
If you look at the schedules coming up for Houston and then for Indianapolis, okay?
Yes.
If Pittsburgh somehow beats Indy and Houston beats Denver,
okay,
next month is going to decide the South. And Houston, I think, can do it.
Because they haven't played Indianapolis yet.
They haven't played each other yet.
Dude, there's a game. There's a visit. There's Buffalo visiting them on a Thursday night.
So Houston beats Denver, right? That's two in a row. Jacksonville, Tennessee.
Let's go slow here. Houston beats
Denver.
They're now
500.
Correct.
And division games, very winnable against Jacksonville and Tennessee the next 2 weeks. They're 6-4 against Buffalo with Indy and KC after.
Now, you say the Colts lose in Pittsburgh. They're 7-2.
Yeah, now go to the Colts schedule, okay?
And then they have to go to Berlin to take on the Falcons. You're saying that they lose in Germany?
I'm just saying weird stuff happens in the international games. Maybe they drop that because Atlanta gets rolling, okay? Suddenly, they got KC.
Your Sprockets was pretty weird.
I don't know. I'm just saying. It could get a little hairy in the next month.
Okay. Okay, I just went higher register for, you know, moving on to TJ.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you got, TJ?
All right, guys, so the National Football League, the trade deadline's coming up, right? In a few days, really.
Next week, right?
And we've got a huge game between two, you know, I'd say Super Bowl favorites. The Chiefs and the Kansas City Chiefs and Buffalo Bills are playing on Sunday, and it's going to be a huge game, right? And I'm completely convinced that the loser of the Chiefs Bills, they definitely won't make a panic trade deadline deal and try to get their team a little bit better.
The loser of the Chiefs Bills game totally won't make a panic. So I'm trying to figure out here. You're going.
I'm trying to be a little.
You're going cutesy, sarcastic. With your
sarcastic. Like they're definitely not going to make a deal to get their team a little bit.
Follow that one, bud.
You didn't get it? All right.
No, I got it. So what? Just in all
seriousness, whoever loses this game is going to make a panic deal and trade for something.
Like a panic move to try to get better.
Yes.
Why didn't you just say that?
I told you I don't like this.
TJ does not.
I don't like this thing.
Because he's a lower register guy.
Well, because he says, like, it's got to be this.
I don't know. If you want to, just tell us if you don't want to do it.
I mean, I'm in it.
Okay.
Like Eiserman.
All right.
Sorry, guys.
You know how I feel about this guy. I've been caping for him for years. Because he made me a very happy guy over and over and over again. As a matter of fact, this October could be my final full month in which I'm able to dine out on a Wolverine victory over the Ohio State Buckeyes year in and year out, as you know, okay? He didn't look very good in week two after a terrific week one start for the Minnesota Vikings, and now he's back. And this team, for the Minnesota Vikings, they need him. And everything is going against J.J. McCarthy right now. A lot of people are thinking that he just had a sabbatical, and if Carson Wentz wasn't hurt, he'd still be starting, and all this stuff about him. And I keep saying it over and over and over again. Okay? Believe in him. But that offensive line is not protecting anybody. And it's just a lot of ups and downs. So I'll just say this. I'm not worried about J.J. McCarthy at all. Okay. As he's returning to the Minnesota Vikings. I'm really not worried about him.
All right.
You know what I mean?
I hear you.
I'm not worried about the organization getting ready to get rid of him. I'm not thinking of the organization looking at what Seattle's doing with Darnold and what the Colts are doing with Daniel Jones and sitting there thinking anything about J.J. other than the fact that he's their future. I know their head coach once upon a time on this very show said that organizations fail young quarterbacks before young quarterbacks fail organizations. And I really believe he means that. But with the Detroit Lions coming off their bye, having paid their Michigan man $180 million, not worried about J.J. McCarthy at all. And that's my higher register.
This wasn't our best one this week.
I don't know about you, but mine looked like money.
Are you sure? Yeah. Sure about that?
Mm-hmm. See, he's bitter. This
about
is guys,
what?
You
what
are
am I bitter
under,
about? My life
are the king.
Great.
No, you know what? You know what your higher register should be half the time on this show? I'm not bitter about this at all.
What am I bitter
no,
about?
No. You keep doing what you say about the Dallas Cowboys, but then I'm suddenly happy.
I really
don't. No. Don't
really
say what you can. No, don't. I don't. I know. Missed you. You are the king of saying you don't care, but you read every internet comment that's ever been said with a T or a J in it.
Okay.
And then you get that. So then I know the way you operate.
I don't know that you do.
Uh oh.
I'm not sure.
He
that
just
you
went
do.
Higher register.
I'm
about
sure that
it.
You
I kind of think you like this segment.
I mean, you know.
All right, let's get all of our ducks in a row again. Okay.
Yeah, we've got a guest, guys.
We do. It's Gabriel Luna. Come on out, Gabriel Luna.
Let's go.
Yet more standard light fare. John Wayne Gacy. It's coming up.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.
A radio audience has just returned here on ESPN Radio. We're talking to Gabriel Luna, who plays the lead investigator on the famed John Wayne Gacy case of the 70s in Devil in Disguise, John Wayne Gacy, available now for streaming on Peacock. And just, again, the way it is shot, it looks like a film. It looks like a movie.
Yeah.
And I mean, the 70s get-ups that you're in as well, I mean, it's spot on.
I showed you backstage. I mean, that's all, you know, that was his style. He was a...
The detective.
Detective Tovar, yeah. Right. He was just, you know, he was former vice. You know, mm-hmm. He was a narcotics cop. Well, he was a beat cop, and then he got promoted and continued to get promoted because he was just, he was very ambitious and very good at his job. And he in a room full of suits, he was the leather jackets with the fly lapels and the full-on Fu Manchu mustache.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, he was just a... It's a really cool cat, and I had a lot of fun. Kind of, thankfully, I had my mustache and facial hair from The Last of Us, and then my long hair and everything else. So we just kind of, you know, tailored it around.
And
that.
If you wouldn't mind, share with me what you share with everybody what you shared with me in the green room about your character's daughter.
Oh yeah,
having reached out to you, right?
Yeah, I think you know, we were because elements of our story are. Somewhat fictionalized, so it's not a one-to-one to the true events. We made sure that you know, ahead of time, Patrick was like, maybe we reach out to these individuals after the fact,
mm-hmm.
just to because my character is primarily Detective Tovar's experience, but it's a bit of an amalgam of a few people's experience, and so I was really looking forward to meeting him, and I wanted to speak with him. And I was just waiting until the show came out, and now that the show is out, it's I have every intention of going down to Kerrville, Texas, where he now resides. Mm. But his daughter reached out to me on Instagram, and it just filled my heart with pride, and I was so honored that she would do that because she herself was very prideful of the depiction, and that's all you really want. And
you got to be so pleased about that.
Oh
obviously.
Man, I mean, you know, because I was just going off of a lot of. Interviews that he had done,
mm-hmm.
and photographs, and just tailoring it, and then trying to infuse my own experience. But to hear her say that it really was, she felt that she was watching her father up there was the highest of praise I could get. And then she was like, do you want to see photos of him from back then? Because the photos I have are just kind of public photos of him in the case. But these are all these really, really awesome photos. Just he and her brother, Rodney, who I believe is passed. And the kid in the show who plays my son, just to see kind of where, you know, what, where, you know, where that all is derived. And it's just, you know, it's him in these really touching personal moments with his family. And so she's able to send me all those photos. Really cool.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah. Gabriel Luna here on the Rich Eisen Show. So how do you, again, dovetailing again what this show is about, Devil in Disguise, John Wayne Gacy, and also The Last of Us. When you come off the set, do you like watch a comedy? What do you do? Do you pour yourself a drink? I don't know if you're a drinker, because this is some really intense stuff that you're doing.
I think, it's like re-entry, you know? It's like I always liken it to kind of an astronaut coming back, you know? and you hope that, because truly, you know, if you immerse yourself deep enough, you are kind of returning from just in this other world that we've built, you know? And thankfully, my wife is wonderful, and she just helps to kind of...
I like that.
Just to kind of pull me back into it. And,
okay.
But I bring home with me, so we always travel together on these jobs.
Okay.
I play the guitar a lot.
Okay.
And that kind of helps me just let everything kind of...
What do you play on the guitar? What do you do?
I play a lot of country tunes. I'm from Austin, Texas.
So, all right. All right.
A lot of George Strait and Dwight Yoakam.
Okay. I like it. Yeah. I like it. When did you realize The Last of Us was a massive hit?
Oh, man. I mean, I guess week one when it finally premiered.
Week one.
I think...
Did you get a sense on the set when you're shooting it?
Absolutely.
Pedro Pascal and the rest of the crew?
I've worked with HBO 3 times now, and they have a dedication to maintaining a standard.
Sure.
And they do what they need to do to make sure that they achieve that and meet that bar. And I had no question that the production itself was going to be what it was. But, Craig Mazin, our showrunner and the writer, is just a genius. And we'd get these scripts coming in, and, you know, he writes every letter of every word of every script.
He does.
And just to, when you're on a plane and you're tearing up in public in front of people, just because you're reading in black and white, you just kind of know it's there. But until you finish it, until it's in front of the people, you don't want to count your chickens, you know. But when we released the trailer in Brazil, we were in Sao Paulo at it's the biggest Comic-Con in the world. I think there's like 250,000 people.
Well, there's nothing little of in Sao Paulo.
Yeah, no, they do it big when they do it.
Like the city, just like everything.
Yeah.
But, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
No. We premiered the trailer there, and just to see the response, I guess, when it hit YouTube, it's like, okay, you know, people are pretty excited about this. Mm-hmm. And if we deliver, I think it has the potential to catch fire, and it did.
You got a good Pedro Pascal story? Give me your favorite one.
Oh,
it's about him as a person or about him as an actor or working with him in a scene?
He's just a sweetheart, man. He's just, just so talented and so present. And I think, but also just really playful. And I guess one story I have, we were doing this scene where Catherine O'Hara, who plays Gail, the show's been out for a while, so I don't want to get away. But we return her husband, played by Joey Pants, return his body to the community, and it's this really dramatic scene where she's confronting him, and she smacks him, and she's weeping in my arms, just completely bawling, you know, and she's a legend.
I think it
usually takes a comedic genius to be able to achieve those like high dramatic, you know, peaks. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, she's crying and crying and crying in my arms. And then Neil, who was directing it, he's the creator of the game, he was directing that episode, he calls cut, but he's a bit of a soft-spoken guy, so she doesn't hear him. And I thought she did, but I thought maybe she was just kind of still in it, and she's just crying and crying, bawling, oh my God, my shirt is soaked. And then I look over at Pedro, and he looks at me, and he's holding it in, trying not to laugh, and then he's getting Bella cracking up, and then he's like, just tell her. I was like, okay, Catherine, They called cut. She's like, oh, they called cut? Oh. And she just like wipes away the tears instantly, just snaps out of it. And then he just like rolls on the ground, literally rolling on the ground laughing. And I, you know, that's just kind of the sense of play that we kind of, you know, you ask about how you come back from these really dramatic things. And I think it's important to just, you know, kind of be loose and be willing to laugh and, you know, for sake of crying.
What was it like in FUBAR with Arnold? You got a good
Arnold's my guy, dude. He's my, you know, I've grown up, my mother raised me. My father passed before I was born. And my mother was 15 when she had me. So she's a 15-year-old widow. Mm. And so throughout my life, I've found different father figures, football coaches, professors. And then here at 42 years old, I'm just like, who is that in my life? And it's him. And
no kidding.
I couldn't be luckier, man, because he certainly embraced me when we did the Terminator film. And then we did FUBAR together. And then we did a animated show called Secret Level for Amazon Prime, directed by Tim Miller, who directed us in Terminator. And so we've worked together a lot. And now I'm working with his son-in-law, Chris Pratt, on The Terminal List, which is going to come out next year.
Yeah.
And he's just, you know, he's so disciplined. He's just so funny. Like his modus operandi is Kindergarten Cop Arnold, or like Last Action Hero Arnold. Like that's who he is. You know, Commando and Terminator, all that stuff. Those are constructs that he built, mm-hmm. characters he built. But who he is him in those comedies. You know. So that was great to see that, you know, that return to form in FUBAR, to have that kind of, you know, the comedic kind of side of him. I guess one of my best Arnold stories is, so he loves to quote himself. Like he'll do it anywhere, anytime, drop of a hat. So, we'll be on set and, you know, Grip will be carrying a C-stand and they're like, come on, I need that C-stand. And he'll be like, do it now. What are you waiting for? But my favorite story is we're at brunch after training in Budapest. And we're doing Terminator.
Nice.
And a friend of his from Austria was in town. And I'm sitting across Arnold. He's eating his oatmeal. Nice. And my wife is next to me. And then his friend Clemens was sitting next to him. And they're having a conversation about their families. And they get to the conversation about their fathers. And so she says to him, she's like, so what does your father do? Talking to Clemens. And then like mid bite of his oatmeal, Arnold just goes, who is your daddy and what does he do? Which is obviously a line from Kindergarten Cop. But yeah, he's just and his timing is impeccable. That's how he rolls.
Mid oatmeal eat, he quotes himself, inserts himself into someone else's diet.
Dude, he didn't even look over there. He just kind of just continued eating his oatmeal.
That is amazing.
But you got to tell him about the baby chair.
Oh, yeah. When Arnold came on the show, he saw the seat in which you are currently sitting.
Yeah.
And he says, I cannot sit in that. Yeah. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, that's a baby chair.
Baby chair.
I don't want to sit in the baby chair. Because he was concerned about his energy and he wants to be up as opposed to sit. You could see you kind of recline in these chairs.
Yeah, I'm just like laid
back.
So
that's the only time in the history of this show he walked over to Chris's chair. Yeah. And he wheeled it over, and we just, okay, sit however you wish to sit, sir.
What are you going
to,
you can tell the governor that you can't use your chair?
This is him doing it.
Yeah.
There it is. We removed the chair, and he brought his chair over, man. Like, okay.
I love that.
And then a few times he did quote himself. You know, he told a bunch of great stories, and obviously he's Arnold freaking Schwarzenegger.
Jesus, I love him.
All right, so in the few minutes I have left, Gabriel Looney here on the Rich Eisen Show. You know, we just met. TJ, I'll share with you what he told me in the back. He took The Last of Us, thinking it was about the Cowboys secondary. That's what he thought. You know, what he thought it was.
Who is disrespect our guests like that?
Right? Oh, man. No, I'm looking at you, fellow Cowboy fan.
Well, I'm
throwing it in your direction.
Hey, how about them Cowboys, TJ?
Hey.
But really, tell me, how about them? Like, how are they doing? Can we revive them?
Yeah, maybe next year we can.
Oh, man. Yeah. But Dak is slinging that thing around.
He is
around.
Indeed.
Yeah, say that again, man.
And that's a true story.
And I swear, like the first time I saw him, I went. They were playing the Rams at the Coliseum in preseason, his rookie year.
Oh yes, I remember that.
And he came in, man. He threw a 20-yard rope to the sideline.
Yes.
And I was like, "Holy moly, this guy!" You know, and he's just his composure, everything. I was like, "Man, this guy's really."
Yeah, that was when Romo got hurt in the preseason, right? Was the ascension was beginning at that point in time, or was it a year after?
No, I think he got hurt a little later in the season.
I see what you're saying.
But I just saw him throw that out route, And I was like, wow. And then he just kept this whole drive. He put together a great drive. I was like, man, that guy is really well composed. And even the Rams fan behind me was like, yeah, man, he's poised. And from that day on, I've always been a Dak guy. And he started to dial in those long balls. He was kind of overshooting a lot of guys. But now it's just everything's on the money. And I just wish that, you know, one thing is working, the other thing isn't working. That just seems to always
be the case. No, I know it's a little bit off. But before I let you go in the few minutes we have left, let's crow a little bit about what you wanted to crow about. You're telling me in the back there.
What's
that? You're a Spurs fan? You're a Spurs fan?
Oh, come on.
Oh, man.
Yeah, big time.
Lucky you.
Well, I mean, wow. I'm a Longhorns fan that's our professional team in Austin.
Nice.
But but I'm just like, you know, I work by proximity. So Spurs I've always been my team. And I've always been a Cowboys guy because I wore number 12 for Roger Staubach.
Why not?
As an outside linebacker, strong safety.
Nice.
But they also needed me because I was kind of the insurance policy quarterback. So they always needed me to wear a quarterback number. But And I loved the Oilers before they moved because Warren Moon had my name. My last name was Luna.
Nice.
And so I was a split. Well, when they moved, so I just became solely a Cowboys fan. But the Spurs have always been just my heart. And the fact that we have just an absolute once in a lifetime.
He's a unicorn. Victor Wembanyama is a unicorn, and we all knew it coming in. I'll say it again. Like right now, early in the NBA season, there are some people and teams to talk about.
Yeah.
But none of them compare to Victor Wembanyama. What we're seeing through the first 2 weeks of this season, and what we've expected from him up until this point, and what we're seeing is just.
Yeah, I think tonight we have the chance to go 5-0 for the first time in franchise
which history. We have a longtime listener and viewer of the show, Jimmy in San Antonio, who came on the air and mentioned that. We're like, really?
Yeah.
Because you'd think the Admiral would have done it. You'd think, you know, Duncan would have done it. You'd think any of the pop teams would have done it.
Tony Manu and them boys. I guess not. But I loved his response. He was like, wow, that's crazy. I would have thought that's been done before. But, you know, let's go beat that record. Just. Yeah. Very nonchalant about it. Yeah. I love his confidence. I love his dedication, his training. And then he's put on like 35 pounds, looks like.
And it still looks like he still needs to put on. More.
I know, right?
And just, I guess what happens when you're 7'6".
Everything he does is just.
Look at that picture that's right there.
Stuff you never
seen
before.
Look where his hand is. That's what we were saying the other day.
Over the box.
It's over the box.
I love it. I love the way he. Just people think that they have a sliver of light and it just closes up on them. It's just amazing to watch. I got the league pass this year because I've been out of the country for the last 3 years and I miss basketball season most times. And I'm up at 3 a.m. watching games and I have to work in the morning. And now I can actually watch it on when they actually airs.
There you go. And not get your sleep and get all that stuff. Yeah. Hey, man, congrats everything going on in your career.
Rich.
Again, all episodes of Devil in Disguise, John Wayne Gacy dropped just last week or a couple weeks ago on October 16th. It's a limited series. It's 8 episodes. It is beautifully shot and obviously acted. And everybody check it out. Available streaming on Peacock. At I Am Gabriel Luna on Instagram. Be one of the gajillions who follow this man. Congrats on everything going on. And come back anytime you want, man.
Thanks, brother.
Because I think Wembanyama might be still undefeated.
He'll probably need your chair, too. Yeah.
Everything's a baby chair to him. Gabriel Luna here on the Rich Eisen Show. We're back up to wrap up this Thursday in a sec.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
Presented by Progressive Insurance. Take the next step forward in your career with great benefits and an award-winning workplace. Apply at careers.progressive.com. Phil in New York City. I'm interested to hear what Phil has to say. What's up, Philip?
Rich, first time, long time.
Hey.
Also a fellow member of the tribe who happens to be a Yankee and a Jet fan as well. So I have to say,
I
appreciate a lot of your takes.
Simpatico.
I like it. Yes.
I wanted to add some real true context.
Okay.
To this debate that's been going on between the three of you.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like sometimes you and Brockman give TJ a hard time.
Okay.
So I do want to say I understand TJ's perspective about, you know, if you have the tickets, do you bring a friend and all of that?
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds good in theory. It does. But as somebody who actually did it in real practical terms, I'm telling you right now, the worst thing you could possibly do.
All right, tell me, what were the circumstances? You took a friend of the game that was actively rooting against which team? Yankees, Jets, which
one? I had the chance to take three friends to the world's most famous arena for a Rangers-Islanders game.
Oh,
and we not only had four seats, but there were four suite seats. So included was food, drink.
Oh, the whole schmear.
You know, above 21 drink.
Yeah. Okay.
As an active Ranger fan, my friend, an active Ranger fan, we thought this would be fun, a little friendly competition. It turned out to be the opposite. The Islanders proceeded to win like 5-1. Not only was the game terrible, my two friends who are Islander fans proceeded to drink themselves under the bar, laughing and smiling the whole way.
No way.
And I've regretted it ever since. They wouldn't let me hear the end of it. I'm telling you, it sounds nice, TJ. I hear you. It sucks when you're on the wrong side of it.
Exactly.
We need a New York City man to show the lights on this subject matter.
But also, it seems like Phil's friends, you know, they hit the bottle a little too hard. They didn't know how to act in public. Me and my friends know how to act in public. So
I don't know. Phil's kind enough to call in and add perspective.
Phil, thank
don't
you.
Don't throw his friends under a bus. They can drink themselves
he
under it.
He just did it themselves.
Thank you, Phil.
Thanks.
And this is decades after the Rangers Islanders rivalry actually meant anything. I mean, back in the day when shoot the puck Barry and you know Pot Van Sox, all of that stuff. The blue seats back in the world's most famous arena.
Yeah,
that used to be nasty when the Islanders drive for five, when that's all they did was win cups out there on Long Island. That was nasty. And then, of course, the subsequent years were, but now it's like, okay, nice arena you're playing over there now. Very nice. By the way, Nassau Coliseum is where I saw my first concert. Back in the day, I saw Chicago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know who opened for Chicago? The Pizza Terra era?
Steely Dan.
Oh. Nope.
No, they wouldn't open.
Comedian.
Dice Man.
I went to my first concert. No, it wasn't. Nice. I don't even remember who it was.
I don't remember.
It was just a comedian.
You don't remember who it was.
Yeah.
Person telling jokes.
Yeah, my dad drove me and my, this is a story of my life, a friend who I wanted to be more than just friends with out there. Oh.
In a red limo? Were you in?
No. My dad was not in a red limo. My dad didn't drive a red limo.
Well,
he drove me and Kristen out there together.
Kristen?
Yes, indeed.
Oh.
And we went there together. And this is before cell phones. My dad probably drove around Long Island for 2.5 hours and said, meet at this payphone at this time.
Like Almost Famous.
Unbelievable. See? But we're right. A New Yorker, a Northeast guy feels that way.
No, he said he did.
I think it's geographical.
Thanks for listening to the Rich Eisen Show podcast. You can watch and listen to the Rich Eisen Show live weekdays from noon to 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio, Disney Plus, and on the ESPN app. The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.